Welcome back to the 1 Minute Apologist podcast with Dr. Bobby Conway. Sean McDowell shares his perspective on race relations, LGBTQ issues, and much more.
Welcome to the 1 Minute Apologist. 1 Minute Apologist. Apologetics seeks to give credible answers to curious questions, to give a defense.
Sean's father is the famous apologist Josh McDowell, but Sean is an outstanding apologist in his own right. I love Sean's pastoral approach to apologetics. I'm excited to hear the unique way that he responds to a variety of apologetic and cultural issues. Just a quick reminder, I'm asking you, the listener, to help us edit several videos that we have waiting in the queue at the moment. Your donation of $50 will help get these edited and uploaded. If you wish to be part of the 100 people I'm asking to help, you can donate right from our homepage, 1MinuteApologist.com, by clicking on the donate button in the upper right-hand corner. You can also click the direct link in the description of this episode. Final reminder, this recording is only part of the conversation between Bobby and Sean. You can watch the uncut version on our YouTube channel and our Facebook page. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share as well when you are there.
What's up, Sean McDowell?
Man, this is awesome. Good to be on, finally.
I know, bro. I'm so stoked to have you on the program today and excited to be able to engage you in some of the topics and want to tell our listeners that we appreciate you listening in. We would ask that you would share, subscribe, and like. What we'll do after this episode, as we do with all of our other lives, is we'll break them into little small features as well. So we'll try to maximize this one video and turn it into about 7 or 8 or 9 videos. And we'd ask that you would help share that information. Sean, it is such a privilege to have you. I know that you and I have been friends for quite some time now, and I just am thankful for you. We were just talking before we jumped on live together about how we're 15 minutes away, but we're practicing social distancing, aren't we, bro?
We're working on it, man. I got to tell you, just for our audience, there's no one that I get confused with more in the apologetics world than you, which is hilarious. I love it. I'm like, that's a compliment. I'll take it, man.
I know, right? Well, we're kind of, you know, we kind of both do the deal with our do. We're both kind of, you know, we're kind of aging at the same pace, you know, but my beard is far more gray than yours. In fact, I just had shave it off because my wife said she feels like she's married to a 60-year-old. So I parted ways with it.
Good move. The wife says if that settles it, do it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, for those, if you're not familiar, as I'm sure most of you would be, Sean McDowell is a professor at Biola. He is the author of numerous books. He's an internationally known speaker, apologist, writer. And what I love about Sean McDowell is his humility. I love his passion for Christ. I love his thoughtfulness. Sean, as we've talked before we jumped on about some of the things that we could dialogue together on, I felt like the LGBTQ movement could be something that you could speak into. I know you've written a book on this. I know with Monday's decision, that's going to affect some of this as well. Gen Z is a real area of expertise that you have. So I just want to open it up to you. I mean, here we are. What kind of a culture are we living in here today? It looks a lot different 90 days later before we went into COVID, right?
You know, I'll tell you, Bobby, something that's interesting. I've asked my dad, who's done this a lot longer than you and me, about you and me put together publicly. And I just asked J.P. Moreland, I was interviewing him, and I said, the question of both of them, have you seen anything in culture like this where there's so much tribalism, there's so much quick to denounce, there's so much anger that's coming out on so many levels? And both of them were just like, no, I have not seen this really in many ways since Vietnam. Now, there's been some other times where there's been a lot of hurt in our culture. But for them to just reflectively say that tells us we're at a moment almost like the perfect storm you have with so much of this racial tension that is going on. Mm-hmm. And some of it raises issues we need to deal with. You've got COVID. You've got this LGBTQ decision that's taking place. There's just so many things that are coming together. And I think just creating a lot of angst and worry right now. And frankly, I think really what COVID has done is it's kind of brought to the surface issues that were there that we just hadn't dealt with. whether that's racial issues, whether that's issues of loneliness and depression. I think it's just exacerbated issues that were there and kind of brought them to the forefront for us.
Yeah, I'm glad you even threw that last piece in. So we've got this mental health crisis as a result of it. And now I'm thinking, you know, as a person who was served as a pastor many years, putting that pastor hat on, churches are starting to open up. And now, yeah, what are we going to do as it relates to marriage and family? What are we going to do with these race issues? What are we going to do to address the mental health crisis? And how are we going to prepare our youth as we're trying to coach them? As somebody who has served so long in student ministry, still a college professor, still teaching even at Capo High a little bit, what is something that you could tell us as parents that we need to be aware of? What is the state of Gen Zs, and how do we properly parent them toward this noble vision that we're supposed to have in this crumbling culture?
You know, what's so interesting about this question is that one way we look at generations are just big experiences that they have that everybody remembers where they were. My mom is like, I know exactly where I was when JFK got shot. I remember where I was when the Challenger went down or Magic Johnson got HIV. But when it came to like millennials, a lot of millennials remember 9/11. Mm-hmm. Older millennials certainly would. Well, Gen Z was kind of this generation that didn't have these big experiences. They were kind of a post 9/11 generation in one sense. And there wasn't this defining experience. And then all of a sudden, within 3 months, there's two. Well, one, you might say Trump. I mean, they're not going to forget the Trump presidency, for or against. That's going to define them in many ways, as Obama did at the beginning and all that meant. Mm-hmm. But then you also have this quarantine and how that's affected them relationally, spiritually, moving forward, job opportunities, how that's going to affect them economically. And then also a lot of the racial issues that have been going on. I think when Gen Z looks back in 5, 10, 20 years, it's this moment that many of them are going to remember and be very definitive for them. So I would just say parents, our biggest responsibility is to be more involved and more attentive to what's going on with our kids than ever. We can't step back. And I know we're worried about economics and things going on. I have speaking dropped off, so it's easy to start filling up my schedule with things and realize, okay, wait a minute. How are my kids doing? How are the young people in my life? Am I attentive to them? That's where it starts.
Sean, do you think that it impacts the kids who are being raised by parents when kids constantly hear the message, boy, I'd hate to be you. I'm glad I'm going to be checking out soon. What do you think that could tell this next emerging generation about their future?
You know, I think of a couple things. One, on the reverse side, this is a generation that the criticism has been, and this is true for older millennials, kind of this snowflake generation. They've right. never had to deal with any tension and difficulty. Well, now they kind of do. So I don't wish this on anybody, but here's a generation that in some ways I'm heartbroken that they missed prom. I'm heartbroken all the things that have happened sure. to students. I'm not saying this is good, but reality is tough. And it's not easy. And this is kind of a wake up for this generation, at least in terms of this concern about they've just had, you know, John Haidt would talk about how, you know, coddling of this generation, we just so protect them and don't allow them to have any pain or hurt. We're afraid they're going to fail. Well, that's been impossible now. So in one sense, it's a little bit of a wake up call for them. But I don't think it helps for adults to just say the thing like, hey, sucks to be you, glad I'm not you. I mean, that just doesn't win any empathy. It doesn't win any understanding. I mean, if a kid says they miss prom, I'm going to like be sorry for them, because when I was in high school, that was like super important to me at that season. Mm-hmm. So for adults, I think one of the best ways to connect with the heart of a young person is just to show empathy, to show understanding, to listen, and to just process it. Hey, you know, I've had a lot of students who have told me, man, one this weekend told me, he said, I didn't go to a prom before because I just wanted to go my senior year. Mm-hmm. I was saving money, playing with my friends. Well, that's a heartbroken. So I'm not going to say to a kid like that, hey, man, sucks to be you, you know, too bad. Like, that's not going to win any favor. I'm just going to be like, man, I am so sorry. Just like Romans 12:15, mourn with those who mourn and be happy with those who are happy. that builds relationship and connection with young people right now who they really don't know what the future looks like. You and I are going to weather this. We're going to figure it out. We're older. I'm not worried about you. You're not worried about me. But this generation, they're fragile.
I'm worried about you, Sean. I'm really worried about you, bro. I mean.
For different reasons we've talked about.
Okay, yeah. So you're right, though. We're going to weather this. One of my concerns and one of the things I love is that you've dedicated your life to making sure that you've provided a worldview for kids to think through, a grid. You know, so many kids are growing up without this worldview. And I'm just thinking of America alone. And we're thinking about some of these issues. You know, how important is it that student pastors and that lead pastors of churches, just congregations in general, really start equipping parents what it means to raise their kids with the biblical worldview? I fear that if they don't, these kind of decisions that were passed down on Monday, our kids are just going to fall right into that. And these are going to be our future leaders, and they're going to be struggling to shed off some of the liberalism that they caught by surprise.
Well, you're exactly right. Really, what's taking place right now is a battle and a distinction of worldviews. So when it comes to this racial issue, for example, how are we going to process this? Are we going to bring a genuine Christian worldview and mourn with people, relate to people, listen to people, fight for justice? These are biblical ideas. Or this critical race theory, which, you know, frames the world in terms of oppression and oppressor. Mm-hmm. If we don't help young people think through some of these ideas, they're just simply going to absorb the culture that they're in. I mean, I just finished a book, an update to the whole True Love Wait series. And one of the things is I thought about communicating sexuality to this generation is so many of them had just adopted a view of love that's not biblically based. The view of love for this generation is I have to affirm however you define yourself. Yep. That's supportive. That's love. And if I don't, I'm hateful. Well, that's not a biblical definition of love. Biblical definition of love is in Jesus' sacrifice, you know, laying down your life for another. But it's also rooted in doing what is best for another, even if that person doesn't understand it or value it or appreciate it. So the people taking Jesus to the cross and crucifying him were jeering him, but he was doing the absolute best thing for them. That was an act of love. So just like when it comes to this racial issue, underlying it, our worldview issues, well, that's true with the LGBTQ issue as well. So are we in conversations with young people? Are we talking with them about it? Because the bottom line is this, if we don't intentionally help young people develop a biblical worldview, they will unintentionally adopt the ideas of the culture that we live in.
Wow. I mean, that is a very pointed yet provocative statement, Sean. Stepping back and addressing how we got to get in there and give this biblical worldview, I would say things like racism and you know, the whole LGBTQ. There are issues today that are emerging, and I'm thankful that we have a culture ready to show some acceptance to diversity and some acceptance to even people that they might not relate to, areas where the church dropped the ball in the past. But my fear is we go from, you know, a church culture, maybe that would be our parents' generation that had the reputation of being all truth and no grace, to now swing the pendulum and now creating a culture with all grace and no truth. And just trying to look down the road, what kind of things should we be thinking about in the church? How are we going to, you know, how do we equip kids that go to school with all these people that are totally affirming? How do you get around that? Like, how can we truly tell somebody, listen, it's possible for me to accept you even though I don't agree with you? In fact, that's a heightened kind of tolerance. How do we kind of get that message out when it's so bleeding over in media and everywhere we go?
Well, it starts with a worldview shift with us and caring about this and prioritizing this in our money and our time and our resources. So I'll just give an example. My 13-year-old daughter, we live about 10 minutes from the beach. And she has just been into surfing lately and wanted her own surfboard for the first time. You know, that's like $400 at least to get a decent used one. That's not cheap. That costs something, especially now with what's going on. And I thought, I'm not just going to give it to you. You're going to have to work for this so you appreciate it. And I came up with the idea that Summit Ministries, which you and I speak for, have these virtual 5-day summit conferences. You're on in the morning and you're on at night. I said to my daughter, I said, look, if you're willing to do this for, say, just 5 days and you take notes and you talk to me about it, then I'll buy you this surfboard. We'll pick it out together. And she did it. She went through it. Now, Summit's designed for 16 to 25. So a couple of the talks on like Marxism were lost on her. But my dad and I are sitting around at dinner teaching it to her and having conversations. But to me, the bottom line is, as a parent, this is what Jim and I do in our book, is we're not trying to give some new plan of how to, like, we got to adopt this entirely new plan with this generation. Rather, what we're saying is there are opportunities in front of us. If we'll shift our mindset and we'll take those opportunities and be more intentional, that's what it takes. So that was just one small example I did with my daughter, and she learned some stuff. And she also learned, if I'm going to get a surfboard, I also got to work for something. Things don't come for free. I think the church can do this. I mean, there's a growing apologetics movement, which I'm encouraged by, but I'm just amazed how many segments in the church still, it's experience-based, it's just your feelings, and it's not rooted in what is true and what we know and what is right. And when we don't ground kids in that, no wonder they walk away when they're challenged or they're tempted or even, you know, encounter something going on with like the LGBTQ conversation right now. If they haven't been taught how to think about love and scripture and why Jesus's worldview is actually good for people, then these ideas are just too much for them.
Yeah, it really concerns me just as well. You know, we live in a soundbite culture, and, you know, just my message to students is, hey, you know, slow down, you know, read more thoroughly. Don't just, you know, take the bait of the soundbites and form your opinions. Anybody can read a soundbite and, you know, feel like they're in formed. As you know, and I know, getting into research and the further we think about things, the more we realize we don't know. It's humbling. And I think that it's going to require a lot of, I was talking on the radio today, and one of the questions that I was just dealing with, I don't remember the question, but I came up with just the importance of rhetoric. We absolutely have to figure out a way to have a better rhetoric. Last night I was going back and forth. I was watching Fox News, MSNBC. I purposely go just back and forth.
So do I.
And my brain's thinking like, okay, here's the narrative that our culture's getting. And I'm thinking, maybe I kind of wish there was like a medium outlet that could kind of interpret both these sides to kind of inform people what's going on. But what I realize is, everyone's just preaching to the choir, and we're never going to be able to advance the cultural conversation unless we can validate, understand. So some of the things that we're beginning to have our eyes open on the race issue, I think we need to do across the board as it relates to all issues. Let's validate. Let's listen. And that doesn't mean that let's listen to everybody except Christians. You know, we need to listen. How important do you think rhetoric is as it relates to apologetics, Sean?
I actually think if I could give any advice to the apologetic community, it would be to lead with kindness and guard our rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Now, do I say this because I have it nailed? No. I'm on TikTok, Bobby, and you filmed one for me, actually. And I get on there, and some of the comments are ignorant, and they're just they pull out the worst of me. So I just try to train myself, okay, either don't say something, ask a question, or just say Jesus loves you. Like, that's the principle leading forward. But I had a really interesting conversation yesterday on the Unbelievable show with Justin Brierley, and it was a fellow by the name of John Steingard. This is one of the recent, he was the leading singer for Hawk Nelson and came out, left his faith. So we've heard Joshua Harris, and we've heard Bart Campolo, like these kind of big profile stories. His was the most recent one. And I wrote a review of it because he had a 2,200 word post on Instagram talking about walking away from his faith. And a few apologists got on there that you and I know and just pushed back in his ideas, challenged him with the right intention and frustration. But I read it and I called a couple of them and said, you know what? I love you, but I'm telling you, this kind of rhetoric is not going to look good to non-believers and ultimately help advance the gospel. lead with charity and just lead with kindness. So I wrote a review, not knowing, I've never met John before. He ends up reading my post about him. And turns out we got invited on, we had a conversation, and we exchanged numbers. Great. It was a wonderful conversation. I can't wait for people to hear it. I think it's coming out this weekend. But the point is, a relationship began because we push back on ideas. Yep. But I wrote that post thinking, what if he actually reads this? He's not some distant ghost that's out there. He's a real person.
That's right.
And the people I'm interacting with are real people. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, I fall short, Bobby, and I just feel like I'm trying to get better at this every day. But these are human beings and Christians. We live in such an angry culture. Mm-hmm. But remember, it's your kindness that leads to repentance. Paul writes in Romans, a gentle word turns away wrath. In this moment, if somebody said, you know what apologists like, they go, gosh, those guys are like, they're smart. They make me think about ideas, but even more so, they're generous.
Yeah.
And they're kind and they listen. I mean, to me, that would be a game changer. Not only apologists, but Christian in this moment. That humility is what we need. So for me, in a couple of ways, I mean, I hesitate to say this because I put a post out of some books I was reading and somebody's like, ooh, you're showing your credentials. I said, I'm not showing my credentials. I'm a professor. People ask what books I read. So I'm just citing books that I read. Like,
people will,
you know what I mean? I mean, it's this dynamic we're in that people say, listen and spend time, humble yourself. Well, then I do that and try to show an example of how to do it. And people say, well, now you're just showing your credentials. I'm like, okay, you can't win in everybody's eyes.
No.
But I can tell you, Bobby, I have specifically contacted a number of African-American friends over the past couple of weeks and said, help me understand stuff. And I'm telling you, I had some blind spots on a lot of their experience. And I'm not in favor of a lot of the way the protests have been done, but my eyes have been opened to a lot of hurt and a lot of the pain, and really what my African American friends want in ways that I didn't understand before. And that only happens if we just humble ourselves and listen. And I think if more people on the left and right did that without getting defensive, without canceling somebody, without looking for a way to just dismiss somebody, we actually would make some progress here.
Yeah, anybody can be a critic. And unfortunately, you're exactly right. You can post something and or you can not, you'll get busted for not posting. You'll post something, you'll get busted. There's just always people ready to jump on you. And, you know, Sean, I've told you many times before, I mean, I love that about you. I think you really model that kind of humility, that kindness. I love the scriptures. It says a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in setting for silver. And you get this beautiful depiction. Even in 1 Peter 3:15, you know, when we're giving an answer, we need to do it with gentleness and respect, realizing that somebody is created in the Imago Dei. Well, that's wonderful, Sean. So you've been making some phone calls. I guess that would be a good question in light of everything. Is there a particular insight, or are there a few insights that you'd be willing to share that you feel as a Caucasian male that you'd say, man, this is kind of the message that I'm hearing, and this is something that I'm trying to work through and make a difference in the culture moving forward as a result of this?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I wrote a post last week, and the title was Every Black Life Matters, and then in parentheses, but I will not support Black Lives Matters. Trying to make a distinction between the organization and between the phrase.
Right.
And like you, I watch CNN and I watch Fox. And sometimes I feel like they're literally describing different universes.
Yeah.
And part of one of the Fox narratives is to really point out the problems with the protests. And they point out some of the downsides and concerns of Black Lives Matters. That's a piece of this. So I started reading on their website and saw, okay, here's an organization that supports critical race theory. They do support an LGBTQ agenda and against the nuclear family. I think they're actually trying to help race. I don't disparage intentions, but are actually going to make the issue worse. And they have a bunch of views. They're pro-choice. In fact, I had a distinct line that said pro-choice, and about 2 hours after I posted my blog, they removed it from their website. Now, I don't know if I had anything to do with it. I probably didn't, but But literally within I was like, within 2 hours, they pulled this. That's interesting. Man. Maybe others have caught up on it.
Yeah.
So that organization, I don't think any Christian can support the organization given what it stands for in our biblical commitments. So I write this post trying to affirm that every Black life matters, but concerned about the organization, and sent it to a couple Black friends. And one guy, he goes, I don't disagree with this, but I'm just afraid that when we talk about this, it shifts the narrative once again to the injustice against the Black community, to how bad this organization is. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that is so helpful. That's not how I thought about it. In my mind, I'm thinking, I don't want this organization to have any more power than it needs, because I think it's corrupting the culture on so many levels. Mm-hmm. He's looking at this going, finally, people are paying attention. I don't want the larger narrative to get sidetracked by this organization. And I just he told me, he goes, so do some people have concerns about the phrase Black Lives Matters? And I was stunned that he didn't realize some people had concerns. He was stunned that I had any concerns. Hmm. And we're talking about a Black apologist that you know that we have a lot in common with. So the point being that that was just me stepping back going, oh my goodness, I am seeing this through my lens, and I need to think this bigger. So he just gave me a couple phrases that I put in the blog, and he goes, now I think it's sensitive and going to communicate better. So it actually, I called a few, but this was him reaching out to me in a very vulnerable way. And he said, I'm taking a risk. I love you. Here's my concern. Would you reword this? And I just said, man, thank you for taking a risk. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate to think if you didn't and felt a certain way about me and didn't communicate that.
Yeah.
So it's me taking a risk, calling some of my African-American friends. And I guess that's a risk because some people have said, don't call them. And others are like, call them and ask how they're doing. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So I just called some friends that I know. I'm like, here's what I'm thinking. What am I missing? Give me feedback. Tell me if I'm wrong. And then others calling me and giving their feedback. But you know what they both did, Bobby? They both assumed the best about me. Mm. That's what's missing in this, is what often comes from the left, is it doesn't matter your intentions. If you say something not in the right way and don't understand how I feel, I'm going to demonize you.
Yeah.
But it's the people that have reached out to me and said, you know what? I know your intentions because I know you, but here's maybe something you're not thinking about. That's when we find common ground and we make progress.
Yeah, and that's why we need community so desperately in this time with one another, so that we can strive to understand. I do think, even as it relates to Gen Z and some of the parenting stuff you brought up, you know, critical theory, I've been kind of absorbing a bunch of reading in that the last few days. And it's funny, the more I'm reading that, the more I can see that in the media and things like that. And I'm going, I don't know that many people would even be aware of what that term means and how it affects us and culture. But I do feel like, wow, this is really important for us to be aware of some of these things. And so once again, I think it's always easier just to play to our emotion and fire things off. But it takes time to be thoughtful. It takes time to slow down. It takes time to build a relationship. It takes time to validate. And I think that our antics today of just demonizing one another and all this, it's not going to help us until we slow down, a willingness to be thoughtful. People want to, you know, spread their hearts wide open. I want to spread my heart wide open too, but I don't want to do it without thinking. I want to know what
I'm doing.
And I think people think of us as apologists, Sean, sometimes go, oh, okay, you guys just love the academics. I think, no, man, I love a good emotional buzz. I love to sense the presence of God. But I just think that we can't dismiss the importance of clear thinking.
Well, I think that's right. We all have a role to play here. And number one, the emotions of people who've been hurt are very real. And if we don't affirm some of those emotions, number one, it's just not the Christ-like thing to do. But number two, we're not going to make any progress. But on the flip side, truth matters. And I can't tell you how many books I've read about this. And sometimes my mind changes and it's tough depending on studies, the way they're done. We have to have a relentless commitment to truth. It's got to be both of them. And that just takes work. It's easier to just listen to people that agree with you, whether that's CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, follow the people on Twitter that agree with you. And so the challenge, I think, for you and I and for Christians are, can we maintain a kind posture? Can we respond in love when it's not reciprocated? Because it's not going to be, Bobby. I had a debate on stage a year and a half ago with a friend of mine, atheist, YouTuber, anyways, has a good following. And I said, you know, here's a question I have for you. I think you're wrong on same-sex marriage, but I know you're sincere. I don't question your intentions. I think you're trying to do what you think is right. Thus, I want to have kindness towards you. I just think you're wrong about the ideas. Why don't you and your side show the same charity to me? Why do I get demonized? And I'll never forget what he said. He said, because you're trying to steal people's rights. If you do it wrong, even with a smile on your face, it doesn't matter and it hurts people. I mean, let that sink in. There is a very strong vocal side that thinks Christians and you and I and anybody watching this, we're bigots and we're hateful and we're intolerant. And one Christian,
we're the oppressors.
We're the oppressors. One response is to get angry and to preach truth because, you know, when you get hurt, that's a natural response. The question I ask myself a lot, and I feel like I fall short every day, is God, soften my heart. God, give me kindness. I'm not compromising truth, but let anybody who's open-minded see a softness and a kind word and a gentleness amidst this craziness that's going on. And then, frankly, always bringing it back to the gospel.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please leave us a 5-star review and tell your friends about this resource. Also, be sure to check out our YouTube channel and blog for more credible answers to curious questions.